This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to PTBN's NBA Team podcast. This is the A Team, not the B Team, not the C Team, not the D League Team, not the Summer League Team, not any of those teams. It's the A Team, or NBA Team. This is Andrew Reich, your co-host. I'm joined by Adam Murray. Adam Murray, how you doing?
I am doing good. We finished all our divisional previews, so now finally, we can look forward to the season.
You can check out all of those divisional previews. Obviously, there are six divisions in the NBA. We have all of them: Southeast, Atlantic, Central, Southwest, Northwest, Pacific. All of them. A lot of fancy predictions. A lot of nice little number crunching for you. Everything that you need covered from every team up and down. We've got you covered. All 6 hours of it if you want to listen to it all back to back to back. If you're really that desperate, and I don't think you are. But this is just kind of a preview where we're going to go around the league, go bounce around from topic to topic, talk about different things that might be coming on up as the season rolls along that you might want to pay attention to as the season starts. It's going to be starting officially, actually, where the Orlando Magic play at the Smoothie King Center and play my New Orleans Pelicans. That's actually the first game of the season. The opening night, like the real coronation, is on TNT when the San Antonio Spurs get their championship rings and then they play the Dallas Mavericks. That's followed by the Houston Rockets at the LA Lakers. That's going to be on Tuesday, October 28th. And then we get up and going with our regular NBA schedule on the days following that. And you know how that goes with the NBA. You got 82 games, you're chugging them out, you're just trying to get all the way to April without all your legs cut off. So I think it's going to be a fascinating season. Are you pumped about this season, Adam?
It's time for it to it's basketball is in the air. This season is as good as any. There's lots of new excitement players coming in. Lots of turnaround, lots of what ifs this year. This has been a crazy off season, more so than any other.
Yeah,
in recent memory. So
yeah, Adam says that because there was a lot of movement, obviously, in the off season. You could start at the very top with LeBron James. It was the story of the year. It probably will continue to be the story of the year as we finish it up in 2014. And that was that LeBron James went back to Cleveland, his hometown, to go play with the Cavaliers again. We haven't really seen too much of him yet because they've only played preseason. They just played the Miami Heat in Rio de Janeiro. So I don't know. Have you really seen anything that gives you an idea of what they're going to do?
It's preseason. You're having players who aren't going to even be on the team getting 20 minutes a game right now. So
yeah, he looked a little mentally checked out in the Miami game, though. Like, he didn't really care.
Well, why would he? It's preseason. Well, we're not talking practice, but you just need to, okay, let's get back into the swing of things.
And then we had a late-breaking story, and that's going to be a big one, at least at the start of the season. That's that Kevin Durant has a fractured foot, so he's going to be out for they say out indefinitely, but the prognosis says that he's likely going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, which is it's a healthy amount of time. It's going to be at least a month and a half before Durant is back. I hope he doesn't try to come back too soon like Russell Westbrook did with his knee injury, and then he hurts his knee again. He has to take even more time off. So, you know, I hope Kevin just gets himself better and he doesn't try to rush it too much. But, you know,
I think he is going to be out until Christmas.
Ooh, that's a blow.
Christmas Day.
Christmas.
But if you're scheduled for 8 weeks, that puts you early in mid-December. Why not just wait till you become more marketable and guess who's back on Christmas Day? Tune in to ESPN because I assume they'll be on.
On Christmas Day?
Yeah.
See here.
Yeah, they play San Antonio on ABC. So what a more, why not return that game?
Yeah, the Christmas schedule is the one that the NBA always gets right. You know, there's a few of them that they do that kind of are must watches. One of them is the obviously the The Martin Luther King Marathon on Martin Luther King Day. That's one of the better ones. They have quite a few others that I'm trying to remember. The one right before the All-Star break, they always have some fascinating things going on. But the Christmas one is always really, really fun. I can't remember all of them, but I know for sure one of them, I believe, is the Cavaliers playing the Heat, right?
Yeah, so if you're his reps, why not be like, look, man, you want to be the storyline of the NBA? Why not return on Christmas? Nobody's going to care if you come back a week earlier against, Sacramento on the 16th. Why not just wait another week, man? Be back on prime time.
Well, you don't want to be super rusty when you come back. But then again, it's Kevin Durant. This guy scores in his fucking sleep. So
yeah, so if he comes back super rusty, he's still going to be scoring 20 points.
Yeah, exactly. Because I remember it was the game where Russell was scoring points all over the New York Knicks, and then he hurt his knee again, and he was out. So I'm trying to come up with this this Christmas schedule, because I know that's the one that a lot of people look forward to, because a lot of fans, they're in their football mode. I mean, obviously, you and I are both football fans, so we like to pay close attention to that, and then we kind of get into the nitty-gritty of the NBA season when the Christmas season – when Christmas is over, and then we can get past the football outside of the NFL playoffs, and then we can get into the Christmas stuff. I'm trying to look up the Christmas thing, but this freaking machine ain't working. So, but
yeah, let's just figure it's all the playoff teams playing all the other playoff teams.
Yeah.
Utah, you could sit back, celebrate Christmas with your family. Minnesota, you got the day off. Boston, stay home. Where we only want – it's only going to be the good teams.
Yeah, New Orleans Pelicans, you could probably stay home too. Even though they're going to start the season off officially, I don't think they're going to be – there's not going to be much to look forward to. So well, let's go ahead and get to the I'll do this. I'll list off the MVP vote from last year officially. Kevin Durant won the MVP at 1,232 votes. And then it was LeBron James, 891. I mean, it should have been closer than that, huh?
No, it was Durant's year last year. It was – and then, somebody had to get third place, and he got, two votes?
Yeah, the first place votes I didn't pay close attention to, but it was mainly Durant was one and LeBron was second, almost across the board, which means that, when you put the when you get the number of points attributed going first place instead of second place, it starts to really distance you from runner up to the leader. So I guess that's the reason why. Third place though was Blake Griffin at 434 votes. Do you think he can actually repeat that?
Now that Durant's going to be out for 2 months, he's sort of out of the MVP race. So it really comes down to LeBron, maybe D. Rose if he's back at high capacity. Westbrook might replace Durant. Blake Griffin, maybe LaMarcus Aldridge if he somehow steps it up. There's only a handful of guys that have the potential of winning it.
Yeah, you think that Blake might be a little bit hurt by the fact that Chris Paul plays alongside him, and if they have a really good team, that they might split the vote. That happens in the Heisman a lot, where you have two really good teams playing the same team.
But I don't think they're looking for it. Oh man, I totally lost out on the MVP award. I should have won it. They're too busy going, let's go to the finals. Mm-hmm. Usually, the MVP is just one guy who's willing his team. And again, I think LeBron will win it again. It's always the safest pick, and mm-hmm. I don't see any difference in that. Do you?
Yeah. To go off track, back to a topic we were talking about here, the schedule for the official for Christmas: Wizards at Knicks. That's new. This is all Eastern time, noon out on ESPN. 2:30 is going to be Spurs at Thunder. That might potentially, Adam was alluding to, might be the return of Kevin Durant from his foot injury. Right after that, at 5 p.m. on ABC, Cavaliers at Heat. So, everybody's going to be paying attention to that. That's LeBron's return to Miami. Then on TNT at 7 o'clock, it's going to be Lakers at Bulls. I don't know what to expect from that. Clippers-Warriors. We could talk probably bounce to rivalries right now. Do you think the Clippers and the Warriors is one of the funnest rivalries in the NBA right now?
They're not really a rivalry, though. There's no real bad blood between those two teams. Those are just two good teams.
I don't
know.
It felt like they really did not like each other in the first round of the playoffs. It felt like they were staying there.
real rivalries are, you know, like Washington and Chicago were battling it out in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Paul Pierce and Joakim Noah both getting ejected or, you know, teed up and fined. This is preseason they're getting into it. Regular season, they're just like, ah, we're playing each other. Playoffs, everybody's a rival because you don't want to go home.
Well, there's synthetic rivalries because they play. You bump into each other every now and then. Like, I don't think the Thunder and the Grizzlies are rivals. It just so happens that they've played each other in the playoffs over and over again. But I don't know if they're, like, rivals. I don't know if they, like, sit there obsessing over what the other team is doing like the Pacers were with the Miami Heat. The Pacers were, like, the little guy trying to pick on the bully. They were the ones trying to go out there to try to make people make sure they knew that they were not going away, and all it did was make the Miami Heat mad, and they basically plucked the Pacers like a mosquito. So
yeah, that's I see the same thing with Gold. I don't see as they're both like, oh man, it's regular season, we got to get them. Mm-hmm. It's just that'll be a fun game to watch though.
Yeah, the Spurs probably their closest rival is probably Dallas, and with Dallas's new roster, it might be interesting to see if Dallas gets a little closer to him. So the Mavericks and the Spurs, that's a good start to the regular season because, you know, I don't think Cuban dislikes anybody with the Spurs, even though he said that comment about the Alamo like about 7 or 8 years ago. But then they has that then we have the bad blood between Cuban and Daryl Morey of the Houston Rockets. That might be fascinating.
Well, that's just more Morey being, you know, hurt and. It was just, I don't know, it's, well, right now the Spurs rival is everyone because they're the champion, so everyone wants mm-hmm. to knock them off.
Yeah, the Bulls had the same way. I don't think the Bulls, after the Knicks kind of went their way, and the Pistons did too, I felt like the Bulls didn't really have a true rival, because they had gotten to be so good that you just had to challenge, whatever team challenged them to the finals, that was their rival for the year. And then they would vanquish them, and then comes another one. Get rid of them. Here comes another one. The Lakers with Shaq and Kobe was kind of the same way. Do you think Miami had a true rival in their days? Do you think it was Indiana, maybe Chicago, with LeBron?
Maybe. It was just everyone just was taking on, you know, it was just let's just take out the Heat. The Heat did not really reciprocate many of the rivalries. It was just like, oh, we're whatever, we're three superstars, we're just playing, good for you guys.
Do you think that speaks to the NBA as a whole? There's no like general hatred anymore for one another? Do you think the players are just too close?
Well, the times have changed from the, you know, the 80s of the Pistons and the Lakers versus the Celtics and all the, you know, the heated rivalries there. Now it's just nobody wants to get fined and teed up and suspended now.
Yeah, that's
back
why when
then, they didn't care.
That's why when you see things like when Bosch said those comments about LeBron, where he's like, "I don't talk to him anymore." People are like, "Oh, this is," they're rubbing their hands together, like this is fun because they want to see that kind of general like that general kind of like disdain where they just go after each other and they take shots at one another and it creates a lot of animosity. I don't think it necessarily creates the best game because all it does is create tension where. You know, you have to stop the game, and you know people like those days with the Knicks and the Heat in the 90s, and the Knicks and the Pacers, where every game seemed to end in a brawl. But I didn't like that era. I thought that era was kind of one of the most disgusting in the NBA. But it did create rivalries, which is something that's missing in the league.
Well, it was a different time, and you know nowadays, you know, now you have the media trying to fabricate this drama. Oh, Bosch doesn't talk to LeBron, he's like, no, man, he has his new team. He's going to hang out with them now. LeBron's elsewhere. He might say, hi, how you doing? How's the family? But you're not going to be, let's go hang out and let's, why would you talk to him? That would be strange. Like, oh, yeah, I talk to him every night. Every
oh, yeah,
game.
He's my buddy. No, we text all the time.
Yeah, you have your own guy. You have new guys now to hang out with. Now you're the leader of the team.
Do you think it was?
Or you have to be the leader of the team because Dwayne Wade, he's, you know, his legs are falling apart. So
it's going to be a fascinating Bosch in Miami. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, like we mentioned in our divisional previews, they sort of panicked to keep the team together by offering Bosch that max deal. And they made, you know, some solid things to keep themselves relevant. But
yeah. So we talked about a little bit about LeBron, Durant's injury. They were the 1 and 2. We talked about Griffin. After that, it was Joakim Noah. He also won Defensive Player of the Year. Then it goes James Harden, 85 votes, Steph Curry, Chris Paul, Al Jefferson, Paul George, LaMarcus Aldridge for the Portland Trail Blazers, Kevin Love, who is now playing alongside LeBron James with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then two Spurs got 21 votes apiece, Tim Duncan and Tony Parker. DC, any name that I didn't mention that might jump into that fray?
No, that's about... There's only a handful of superstars in the league.
What about Anthony Davis, my guy?
He's developing to become a superstar. He's still young. I don't see why he's not in that category yet. He's just a very good player on a bad team right now.
Kevin Durant obviously ran away with MVP. Do you think he can still win the MVP even though he's out for more than a month?
No, it's going to go back to LeBron again.
Do you think it's a shoehorn, though, that LeBron wins it?
Will he win in Cleveland? I think it might be the Clippers' year, just with all this from a storyline standpoint. Mm-hmm. From the 1 year with all the turmoil, this year they got a new owner, new everything. I think it might be the Clippers' year.
We obviously already talked about in our divisional previews that we like the Thunder, even despite the injury. We like the Clippers and obviously the San Antonio Spurs. Do you like any other team besides that trifecta at the top of the Western Conference that might sneak in and make their way into the top part of the or at least get to the second round of the playoffs?
Second round of the playoffs in the West?
Mm-hmm.
When it hits the West is so tight, really anybody can. Is there much of a drop off? You know, Memphis played Oklahoma City extremely tough over the years. Dallas always gives San Antonio trouble. To be an 8 seed in the West, or not 8, but I'll say a 6 seed, isn't really a bad thing. You're not a bad team. You just lost maybe 2 more games than the guy above you.
Yeah, and the Houston Rockets have 2 All-Stars.
Yeah, it's just... I'll put it this way. Do you have any teams in the West sneaking into the playoffs that haven't? Or do you still see the same 8 teams?
I think I have the same 8 teams. I think it's going to be the Thunder, the Spurs. I don't see the Nuggets getting into the playoffs. I think they played their way out, and it's going to be hard for them to get their way back in. They're going to have to hope that either the Grizzlies drop off or that the Blazers drop off. And I don't think that's going to happen. You know, I think the Grizzlies, even though they're getting older and they didn't really do a lot to help themselves out in terms of age, I don't think that they're going to be slipping anytime soon. And even though the Blazers are not on the like the firmest ground, I don't think they're going to – do you think they're going to be out of the playoffs next year?
The Blazers?
Yeah, Portland.
I think they will slip. I think they'll be like a 6 or 7 seed. I see them out in the first round.
Okay. All the talk in the summer was about big threes. So I'm going to throw Adam some big threes and see how he wants to go. We'll kind of play like eliminator and see who goes ahead of who. Let's start with a mini big three. Kemba Walker, Lance Stephenson, and Al Jefferson. So they're ahead now. Then we're going to go right to the top. LeBron James, Kevin Love, and Kyrie Irving. You would trump them over the Charlottes? Did I call them the Charlotte Bobcats just now?
Yes.
Oh, man. Oh, that's number one. So the Charlotte Hornets. So would you take the Cavs big three over Charlotte's, huh?
I would take a lot of big threes over Charlotte. I don't think Kemba Walker's in that elite level.
Mm-hmm.
Kemba Walker hasn't... He's a good point guard, but is he a superstar? No. Lance Stephenson, has he shown us anything yet? No. A lot of people have him being the most improved player mm-hmm. by default this year because it's his team. But right now you have Al Jefferson coming off an injury, Kemba Walker, who some people think might have peaked, mm-hmm. and an unknown in Stephenson.
Okay. What about Luol Deng, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh?
will be better than Charlotte.
They'll be better than Charlotte, but we'll keep Cleveland at the top. But we'll just kind of put them. We'll put the
Cleveland at the top. I'll put anybody in the East. Who is better than those three right now? I don't see.
I'm trying to look at. Well, we got Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, and Pau Gasol.
Pau Gasol will probably be like a sixth man by the end of the season. To conserve his legs.
Okay.
I don't think. Okay, what are you gonna have him start and play 20 minutes? Okay, fine. I that's more of a sixth man who gets his name called at the beginning.
What about?
He's gonna.
Oh, go ahead.
He's gonna be Derrick Rose coming off perennial injuries. Mm-hmm. It's right now. Yes, we don't. That's an unknown. You have Kyrie Irving and two players who haven't been in that system, and. But they, by default, if you bring in the best player, you have the best three there. You know, what are you going to Wall, Beal, and...
The problem with Wall and Beal is that they're great together. Now, Beal's going to be out with an injury of his own. He'll be out for, I think, the first few weeks of the season at least. But after Beal and Wall, who's your other guy? Is it Marcin Gortat? Is it Nene? Trevor Reese is gone, so do you put in Paul Pierce, who's like 85 years old? Like, I mean, who would be the third man in Washington? You know, it's hard to say.
Yeah, that's why it's just like the term "big three" was just overused. Mm-hmm. You know, with Boston and now Miami has it. So now every team needs a big three, and it's the big three of San Antonio with Ginobili and Parker and Duncan.
Even though the best player is probably Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, it's you don't need. It's just a marketing point to get names out there, more or less. Every team has to have a big three all of a sudden. It's just right now, pound for pound, everyone knows Cleveland is the team to beat, which is
crazy.
That's just the way the chips fell with this offseason. You get enough high draft picks, you can now cash them in apparently for whomever you want.
We're going to go ahead and just jump to another topic. That's going to be coaches under the hot seat, because we had 13 coaching changes last year before the season. This year we had 9. The new coaches were Lionel Hollins. He's at Brooklyn, not too far away. Derek Fisher at Madison Square Garden. He's going to be coaching the New York Knicks. Stan Van Gundy is not only taking over as the head coach, he's the GM for the Detroit Pistons, so he is running the show. And then you got Jason Kidd with the Milwaukee Bucks after that controversial exit from Brooklyn. Byron Scott is the head coach of the LA Lakers. Steve Kerr, he's going to leave announcing, and he's going to be the head coach of the Golden State Warriors. Flip Saunders, he's going to leave as the – well, he's not stepping down as the team president for the Timberwolves. He's going to remain the team president, but he's also going to be the head coach at the same time. Quinn Snyder, who's bounced around a little bit since his exit from Missouri, he's going to be the head coach of the Utah Jazz. And then there's David Blatt, who's been coaching at Maccabi Tel Aviv out in the EuroLeague. He is going to be the man on the spot with the head coach as the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Do you think – there is unfair pressure under David Blatt?
No, I don't think there really is unfair pressure, because I think the way it was set up, it'll be sort of the players will overrule the coach in the situation. So you don't want a strong-minded coach with that team.
Do you think they're going to run his offense, though? Do you think they'll listen to him?
Oh, and the start, yes. Why wouldn't they? Mm-hmm. They have no reason not to try to buy into the system, because they know they're superstar players. So you can't just run around for 48 minutes. You need to try to set up something, because the team has no chemistry.
You're just
a bunch of all-stars with assorted high draft picks. So why not? Okay, let's see what this Princeton offense is all about. None of them have ever done it, I believe.
Not so, really. Only in small parts in college.
And that's a very disciplined offense. So why not? What a better way to have your players sort of gel as a unit with a very strict offense that you can then loosen up starts to fail.
I think what he's going to do is he's going to take that, because I saw little bits and pieces of it from Cavs games, obviously preseason, so Lord knows what it's going to mean at the end of the day. But I could tell that he's going to use the Princeton offense kind of as like little as a little gem here and a little gem there, and he's going to turn into a 3-point shooting offense. It seems to me. It seems like that Princeton offense, the way that they rotate guys, he's going to use it as a way of just wheeling people around for open shots, which is really what the Princeton offense is meant to do anyway. But now he's going to stretch it out to the 3-point line because there's so many good 3-point shooters in the NBA, and that's sort of the way it's going. If you look at 3-point shooting attempts across the board in the NBA, they are all on the up and up. So it seems like the easy way to go, and you definitely have the horses to do it. Kyrie Irving's a good 3-point shooter. He absolutely torched Serbia in the finals of the FIBA World Cup. So when he's open, he's a force. And then we all know about Kevin Love and LeBron James. They're two of the most efficient shooters in the league. So, I mean, that's going to be a terror of an offense if they figure it out.
Yeah, so why not, again, you know, start with that nice set offense, and then they could branch out. Mm-hmm. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't adapt to it, unlike, you know, with the triangle. Nobody seems to want to modify the triangle at all. It's, nope, this is what it is. You can't touch it, and that seems to be a lot of, you know, failures revolve around that. And I think, you know, with a young coach, he's willing to, he has no reason not to adapt.
We obviously think by default, just because of the talent in front of him and what they were, how bad they were last year, that David Blatt's going to probably have the easiest transition in the NBA, at least in terms of numbers of wins. What coach do you think here, or maybe more than one coach, is going to struggle between the others here? Hollins, Fisher, Stan Van Gundy, Jason Kidd, Byron Scott, Steve Kerr, Flip Saunders, Quinn Snyder. Which one you think is going to struggle the most?
Well, right now, the one on the hottest seat has to be Steve Kerr, because the team was already winning. They liked Mark Jackson. Now you bring in this new guy. So if the team starts struggling, whose fault is it? Mm-hmm. It's not the players, who are doing perfectly fine with their, you know, embattled coach. So now,
so you're throwing Kerr right. You're throwing Kerr into the hot seat already.
Well, he has to be. Do you think the fans will be the first one to point out, like, well, what was wrong with the current guy? It's not our fault you didn't like him. You know, you don't need to go swing your money bags around. Be like, no, we need to make a big splash and get the guy we want who will listen to us and do things we want to do. Mm-hmm. He will be the, because he has expectations. A lot of these coaches don't, because they're on bad teams, because, you know, the way the trend is going now, you're not seeing these retread coaches who have been five stops. Mm-hmm. You're now getting first year, you're getting TV analysts, college coaches. Assistants who haven't head coached anywhere.
Fresh blood.
You know, I'm just waiting for the player coach.
Yeah,
LeBron, be the coach.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it does feel like that the coaches that were in the spin cycle for such a long time, guys like Rick Adelman, even Kevin McHale, who had been a coach at for the Minnesota Timberwolves, it feels like those guys are kind of going to the wayside, and they're starting going to new faces and new names just to try it out, because they had convinced themselves for so long that in order to win an NBA championship, you need like a familiar face. You need a Pat Riley. You need a Larry Brown. You need a Phil Jackson. If you don't have a guy that's been in the finals, then you can't make the finals. Well, it's starting to be proven wrong as the years go by, now that Rick Carlisle's won a championship, Eric Spoelstra has won two championships. So now I think you see more willingness to not only put new faces in there as head coaches, but it also gives the owners license to fire these coaches when they don't like the direction, so that they can just plug in the next guy and hope it works.
Yeah, it's a shorter leash now, but then again, can you really be excited, like, okay, fans, here we go. We got Maurice Cheeks. Yay.
No one's excited about Maurice. That's what all the Detroit Pistons fans were saying exactly that way.
You know, he's a proven NBA coach. He's been around. Come on, guys. Now it's just, you know, it failed the first time with Calipari and
Well, he almost took the job with the Cavaliers because he was supposedly promised a front office position, and then Kentucky came in and gave him another – they tore up his contract and gave him another extension. I don't know how true that is, but they do say that he was very close to signing a deal where he would have made like up to $5 million a year.
Yeah, that was the rumor, but – you know, now it failed the first. Now they're trying. Now they're just getting young, fresh minds. Mm-hmm. That's their new thing now. Let's get somebody who's fresh and has a different look.
Or former players.
He's an analyst.
Yeah, or former players who soaked in the knowledge.
He's seen everything, and he's he's Brad Stevens. He's 35. The players love him. He's an innovator and a wonder kid. So it's a lot different than just again the retreads, which is good and bad. So, but there's no expectations on them because they're replacing coach. You know, they're replacing lottery team coaches.
Yeah,
for the most part.
For a lot of these teams, timing's everything. So I think for first year coaches, it's hard to really go right to the hot seat. Now we did see Maurice Cheeks, like you just mentioned. He was hired as the head coach of the Detroit Pistons. By January, he was gone. So it's not like a new thing where a coach that's newly hired in the summertime is gone before you get to the All-Star break. Actually, that happens more often than not. So you think Steve Kerr's gonna be in trouble? Even though he signed a 4-year deal.
I didn't say he'd be in trouble. Or he's gonna. It'll be the seat's a little warmer than like Jason Kidd, who has no expectations, and Quinn Snyder.
Is going to be the one that might be in trouble, because I think if things go really south in Utah, I think they'll be more than willing to let him go.
Yeah, but how more south can you go? your team is already a perennial lottery team, and you're expected to be in the bottom five again this year.
Well, it's like PJ Carlissimo. You remember PJ? He was the head coach of the Thunder. He was actually the head coach of the Sonics before they relocated to Oklahoma City when they drafted Kevin Durant. And then they drafted Russell Westbrook and moved to Oklahoma City. But what happened is that first year, Durant was a second-year player and Westbrook was a rookie, and they were awful to start the season, and Carlissimo got fired. The guy who replaced him was Scottie Brooks, and now Scottie Brooks has gotten this this reputation for being a coach that was at the right place at the right time, because he got promoted right when Durant, Westbrook, and James Harden all hit their peak. So it all depends on where you are and when you're there.
And who is there. And let's say Durant leaves in 2 years. Brooks will be gone another year after that when the team starts tanking again.
Well, let's go. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, if you have superstar players, it makes your job a whole hell of a lot easier. It's a lot easier to already inherit this guy who's the top 10 as opposed to let's hope he develops and he has the potential to be a superstar. Andrew Wiggins could be the next Tracy McGrady. Oh, well, there's a lot of people who are already the next Tracy McGrady.
You talked about one of them in Scottie Brooks. That was actually a guy I had on my list for the actual, the current hot seat for the ones that are sort of incumbent coaches. Do you think Scottie Brooks might be in trouble if Oklahoma City doesn't get to the conference finals?
If they lose in the first round, maybe. But right now, my coaching hot seat would be Kevin McHale in Houston.
Yeah. That's a great one.
If there's a coach who I think will be gone first, it'll be him. If you have Harden and you have Dwight Howard and you start off really slow and an owner who's crazy and tries to get superstars every year, I think he's on a short leash.
What about Frank Vogel in Indiana, who just got an extension?
He got an extension because it wasn't his fault. Paul George is out for the year with his injury.
Think this is a mulligan year?
It should be a mulligan year. I don't think fans would take it too hard if they try to get a high lottery pick. If they try to squeeze into the 8 seed with that talent, they'll just be out in 4 games. There's nobody who they could develop. They don't have young players on that roster they could develop who could step up and become that next top guy. They have people who are who they are. George Hill isn't going to develop into Chris Paul all of a sudden now that he's going to be the focal point.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to see if Vogel can rally troops the way Tom Thibodeau did in Chicago when Derrick Rose went down. So I don't know if he's capable of it, but we're going to at least see what he can get out of his team in terms of overachieving, because they're going to definitely have to overachieve at least to even make the playoffs. You said Kevin McHale. It seems like he's in a little bit of trouble if things go south. The guy that I think is firmly in the hot seat, and he's going to be in some trouble, is a guy down here, and that's Monty Williams for the Pelicans. He's been the head coach there since 2010, and there just has been no traction. They've made no headway up in the divisional standings. It seems like they're just getting worse, and every time they get more pieces, nothing improves. So I think that's the one guy that I think is going to be in a lot of trouble, Monty Williams.
If New Orleans is healthy and they start failing, yes, he's in trouble. If they get injured again, A coach shouldn't be blamed for injuries.
I know, but it happens a lot. You know,
it does happen a lot because that's just the GM saying, you can't fire me, I'm your GM. Well, you're the one that put this crappy team together.
What have you done for me lately? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, you know, so you can't blame him if Eric Gordon and you know, let's say Anthony Davis goes down, Tyreek Evans goes down. You can't blame him. You can't blame Vogel for Paul George going down. You should blame the management for letting Lance Stephenson go. It's not like anybody offered him max money.
But after Popovich and Carlisle, Monty Williams is the most tenured coach in the Western Conference. I mean, and what?
Yeah, that was just due to lowered expectations. Mm-hmm. It was just, we don't want to fire, you know, we don't want to eat any of his contract. What's the point? It doesn't serve the owners to pay $4 or $5 million for another guy to sit at home, paying $10 million for two coaches for the year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now you're starting to see coach deals that are 3 years, four with a team option.
Yeah.
You didn't see those years ago. Remember, it was we'll give you a 7 year deal.
And listeners, remember that the coaching salary does not go on the salary cap. So if you want to fire a coach who has an extension, it's not like you're stuck having to keep the coach. You could fire him and buy out his contract at a certain percentage if you feel like it. It's just a matter of whether or not the owner wants to do it. And so, well, so yeah, some owners, it's not a problem.
Yeah, they're not going to pay. No coach will be like, oh, yeah, most of them just be like, I will take the full amount. Mm-hmm. Why would you want to set, if you're owed $4 million, like, oh, I'll take one to get out of here now. Most of them are just like, no. I assume they cash out at, you know, probably 75-80% of that.
They get good money to leave, you know. I would bet Mo Chiefs got very decent money to leave Detroit. I think he got a 3-year contract, and he probably got a good chunk of that in order to go away.
Yeah, so you're going to have, as an ownership, you're just having dead money and you're just losing money left and right to have the right to have another coach who might be equally as bad.
They fired Avery Johnson. Then they let PJ Carlesimo go. I don't know about Carlesimo's situation because he was an interim head coach. Then they had J. Kidd, and then J. Kidd went to the Bucks. So I don't know exactly how much money they afforded Jason Kidd because they sort of had a bad parting of ways. And now you're paying a new coach in Lionel Hollins. And I remember that was sort of a storyline with hiring a new coach in Brooklyn is that they wanted a coach that they didn't have to pay big money to because they had already had their money tied up with the contracts that they had to buy out between Johnson, Carlesimo, and Jason Kidd.
Yeah, and it's just not a sound way to run your business by firing these people every few years. That's why Monty Williams has hung around, because you don't want to give dead money away.
A lot of people down here think Tom Benson has too much class, but I will say that if they have a losing season by Christmas, I think he might be gone.
Yeah, don't tell Darren Sproles' family that he has class.
Why do you have to remind me of fucking Saints trading Darren Sproles for a 5th-round pick, and Sproles all of a sudden becomes one of the best running backs in the NFL again? You had to remind me of that. Awful. Brian Shaw in Denver.
I have Denver in my crazy prediction is I think Denver will make the 8 seed.
Okay. Well, if they make the playoffs, he'll be okay. Yeah,
that's why I think he'll be fine, because that's my crazy prediction. We'll get to years later, but I think Denver will improve.
Mike Malone. Go ahead with your point.
You need one team every year seems to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, and one, I don't know which one players, it is this year.
But yes, going back to Malone.
Mike Malone in Sacramento.
Lowered expectations?
I don't know. If he keeps doing that, those post-game press conferences where he's just going off on his players for not listening to him, if he keeps doing that, that's going to get old in a hurry, and the players might mount a mutiny. And that happened to John – what was that guy's name? John Kuster? Out in Detroit, one of the 7 coaches that Joe Dumars hired and fired. Well, basically Rip Hamilton and another player, I think it was Ben Gordon, they basically said, thanks but no thanks, I don't want none of this. And Kuster got fired because they didn't want to play for him anymore. I could see that happening in Sacramento. It feels like they don't want to play for him already.
That could be the case, but again, you know, Sacramento just went through a lot of turmoil with new ownership. relocation. The owner could just be, maybe I'll just, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the ownership will be like, let's make a big trade. Now it's time for you to get in line. Like, okay, maybe I will. Maybe he'll just keep spouting off and be gone. But there's no expectations on Sacramento. What's the point of firing? Your team goes 4-15 to start. Well, you probably were going to go, what, 6-13?
Well, that's the other that's the other angle, is that who hired the coach? Is that Pete D'Alessandro hired Mike Malone. So it makes you look bad when you're the new GM, you're the new sheriff in town, and the guy that you picked to run your team is gone. That's why there's this controversy now in Cleveland about Mike Pettine, because the guy that they hired as the GM or the owner, they hired Rob Chudzinski, and then a year later he's gone, and then they hired Mike Pettine, and that's where they got that line from that media guy where they called him the Three Stooges. So it's hard because some of these GMs, they don't want to fire the coach, not necessarily because they're not good enough or anything like that. It's because it hurts their reputation because it was on them that they hired that coach in the first place.
Well, it's just who's telling you. Who's firing him? Is the GM firing him? Is the owner saying, look, get rid of him?
Yeah, that might be a part of the Dell Demps Monty part, yeah.
Yeah, who's calling the shots is the question. Mm-hmm. But as for coaches, they'll be the same usual turnover. Six, seven coaches will be fired. They'll get new ones. You'll see a few retreads. You'll get another crazy college coach or something. And like, remember back in, the, you know, was it like 10 years ago when Billy Donovan flirted with the Orlando Magic?
Oh, he took the job. He did a press conference.
Yeah, I know. He took the job, and then I was like, no, I've changed my mind.
I'm glad he did, though. But
why?
Why am I glad that he didn't go to Orlando? Because I think he would have failed. I think all the college coaches eventually fail. I think if Mike Krzyzewski had taken the Lakers job in 04, he would have failed. I just don't think college – I don't think the professional level is cut out for college coaches that are so used to having control of everything. In college basketball, the coaches run the show. In the NBA, the players run the show. And I think it takes a very special, unique individual as a head coach in order to make people buy into that and keep them in the same mindset throughout an entire season. And I think that Brad Stevens is going to have that trouble too.
They all have that trouble. But again, you know, the dynamics of the NBA is changing.
Yeah.
You're not having those four-year college players who are now superstars. You're having these one-and-done kids who really aren't ready and still need more coaching. And you have coaches now in the NBA like, I don't coach defense. I don't coach offense. Why am I spending my time, you know, teaching you how to play?
Mm-hmm.
So now you're having kids who aren't ready now, as opposed to back in the day where it used to be you stayed 4 years until you were good enough, and now you're going. Now it's all potential now.
Yeah, I
think you need coaching again to come back into the NBA.
Yeah, well, I think the coaching in the NBA is ahead of the college game, and that's why I think when the college coaches go to the NBA, it's such a culture shock for them, and they don't understand how to handle it. I'm not saying that it's necessarily just because of the players not listening to the coach. I do think that the coaches have trouble with the X's and O's once they get to the NBA level, because let's be honest, once you're on guaranteed money, players are not going to run the same play and execute it just the perfect way that you had drawn up. You know, you got to kind of take the good with the bad. And all these coaches, when they get to the NBA, they either learn to accept it or it drives them completely insane and they never want to coach in the NBA again. Look at all of the college coaches that failed. Lon Kruger failed. John Calipari, you just mentioned, failed. Rick Pitino failed. All great coaches in college.
Well, the thing with Pitino and Calipari, they were trying to be rock stars when they came in and be like, look at me. I'm the head of this team now. I'm the one. You're all listening to
me.
They
wanted to be the face of the franchise.
I want the $10 million contract now. You're going to give me 6 years guaranteed up front. They're the ones that came in with big attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
So Brad Stevens was just like, okay, I'll take the job. He's not that rock star, you know, I got Midnight Madness. I have my big Kentucky plane, private jet.
Did you see that?
All over.
Did you see that report about the combine where they had NFL, NBA scouts go to Kentucky to watch their practices so that they didn't have to follow them for games? I don't know. That came off a little bit smug. Because the truth is, the scouts are going to go to the games anyway to see how they play against real players instead of watching them practice. I didn't like that whole combine thing.
It was extremely smug, and that goes to the arrogance of Calipari and Patino. Like, I'm going to bring in all my Kentucky guys, and they're going to win in the NBA again, too. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, he brought he brought in Ron Mercer. Derek Anderson.
So, speaking of bringing in new guys, we have a new draft class, highly rated.
Yeah.
Who do you think's gonna be on the tops this year?
Well, they had a lot of hype going in, but a lot of them were one and doneers, so it's hard to say which ones are gonna break out right in a hurry because some of them were very raw offensively. Andrew Wiggins was the number one overall pick, but offensively, he still has a ways to go. When I looked at the rookie class, I just look at what team they're at and what kind of a fit they have. And the ones that I saw that I like Shabazz Napier in Miami. I think he's going to wind up playing eventually ahead of Mario Chalmers as time goes by. I know that you and I are at a disagreement with this, but I do like Doug McDermott at Chicago. I think he's going to work out very nicely for them. You like Nikola Mirotić, right? The foreigner out of
Serbia. I like him, but he's not going to do much. It's a very big, there's a lot of bodies in front of him. So I like him. I just don't think he'll be much of an impact as I thought he would be before the Gasol signing.
I think everybody likes Jabari Parker as the rookie of the year because he's going to be in Milwaukee. Jason Kidd's the new coach. They need somebody that can take shots because they were one of the worst offenses. They didn't really have a shot maker, and now they got a guy in Parker who not only they can provide the minutes to, but they can provide the shot attempts to. So he's going to get a lot of learning on the job, as they say. So I think having Parker as your like preseason rookie of the year makes sense. Another guy that I think is going to get a lot of play in a hurry is Nerlens Noel for the Philadelphia 76ers. I think there's an obvious reason why he's going to play in a hurry for Philadelphia because that team is just garbage. I mean, they don't even have a center. So playing Nerlens Noel makes sense. But
I think he can easily be the rookie of the year as well.
He's just a good defensive player, man.
He has no reason that he can't get average like 20 rebounds a game on that team.
Another guy in your neck of the woods who might start off in a hurry due to an injury, Marcus Smart, will probably be starting at point guard with Rajon Rondo out. I really don't see Phil Pressey playing ahead of him. Only if Marcus Smart just looks so bad in practice that Stevens just can't play him as a starter.
Marcus Smart will probably be on the all-defensive rookie team. Mm-hmm. If maybe even that is like probably the Boston has the best defensive backcourt in all the league because neither of them could score and both can play solid D with him and Avery Bradley. But Bradley, but Smart doesn't have a shooting touch yet and. People are very split on him up here. Some people love him. Some people think he's a colossal bust already. I think he's going to be good. I have no reason to believe he wouldn't be a superstar. He's basically Rondo insurance at this point.
I'll give you two guys that didn't get drafted, but you might see him play a lot in Houston, and that's because of the fact that they need another big guy in there. One is Tariq Black. You might remember Tariq Black. He played at Memphis, and he transferred to Kansas. But he didn't get drafted, but he got picked up as an undrafted free agent by the Houston Rockets. I've been watching him a little bit. It seems like they might play him some. And the other one is a Greek guy, Kostas Papanikolaou. I think he might play a lot.
Down in Houston.
Yeah,
They gave him a ton of money. He doesn't really have anyone in front of him that's really preventing him from doing anything. Another person,
exactly.
But that's that's just Houston. Houston's court, like I said, I think they're sort of more of a mess than they let on to be. They're sort of just relying on Dwight Howard and James Harden to carry the rest of the team, but they don't.
Which foreigner between these three is going to have the biggest impact on their team? Nikola Mirotić in Chicago, Jozef Nurkić, the big man out in Denver, or Bojan Bogdanović for the Brooklyn Nets?
I thought you were going to skip Bojan. Bojan I would even have as a first-team all-rookie with his potential, because just based on the FIBAs where he shot lights out, there's no reason on that team he's going to get his touches. Because, you know, Kirilenko is going to eventually... He's more better suited, I think, as a six man right now.
Andre Kirilenko is better suited as a doorman.
You know, he's 33. I think he's 33 right now. So he's getting up there. He's slowing down. He can't keep pulling that, the, you know, 10, 5, 5, 5, and 5. Mm-hmm. So I think Bogdanovich can easily take the case for best import of the year.
You and I both like Nurkic, though. He can rebound the ball.
He can rebound. He's too young right now. Mm-hmm. He's going to get time, I think, in the D League for a couple games. Maybe injuries will bring him back up. But you have Mozgov and JaVale McGee ahead of you right now. So,
and J.J. Hickson.
Hickson, yeah, they want to play him as a five, but he's more of a four. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of bodies ahead of him, too, just like Mrotić.
Yeah, if you need a dunk of the year, go on YouTube and put J.J. Hickson's name. He had a couple this year that were just fierce.
Dunk of the, you know, it'll have him, it'll be, you know, Adam... Not Adam Levine. Zach Levine is going to be in the dunk contest.
Adam Levine. I don't know.
Adam Levine.
We need to ask Adam Levine how good he is at basketball. But Zach Levine has got some ups. I'll give him that. He might be a better leaper than Andrew Wiggins. And Andrew Wiggins had that infamous Instagram where he jumped like, what was it, like 40 inches on a standing vertical? They had a picture.
Yeah.
So.
Levine, potato. You know, Andrew Wiggins, I don't think everybody's expecting him to be bad. He can score, you know, he could be a solid 15, 17 point a game quietly. And
here's my problem with Wiggins, though. Is he a shooting guard or a small forward?
Well, he needs to pick one right now. I think he can develop into one or the other because he has that, you know, he has that defensive prowess to be one or the other. He could... The size to be either, so he just needs to decide what does he want to just shoot threes all day, or does he want to be an ISO guy? I don't know which one he is yet.
Because remember when LeBron wrote that letter and he said the names of the people that were on the Cavs, he didn't mention Andrew Wiggins, and I think it was on purpose because the idea of Wiggins as a shooting guard with LeBron at the small forward spot, it wouldn't have worked because he's just not, to me, he's not a natural shooter. In fact, I would say he actually plays the position more that LeBron plays. The only problem is that he's just not a very polished scorer in any way right now, and he doesn't really have a lot of weight on him, whereas LeBron has a lot of upper body strength to go with the shooting, so... You know, he's
If that were the case, I think they just would have made LeBron the four, Deion Waiters would be the two, and Wiggins would be a three.
Yeah, but it's kind of that old story about how when you get older, you slide down the position, like Steve Smith,
because
he was playing the four when he was in his later years. It's like, Jesus, yeah, I remember when he was a point guard at Michigan State. But, yeah, and the next one we got here, we got for Memphis, I've got two of them that I like. Jordan Adams, UCLA, and then Jarnell Stokes, a big man out of Tennessee. Jarnell Stokes, I think, is going to play immediately.
Where is he going to play immediately?
I think he might play ahead of Kostakoufos and relieve Zach Randolph.
Oh, so he's going to play immediately by being a backup.
I think he'll be in the rotation. I'm sorry, let me clarify. What I mean by that is that he'll be in the rotation.
Wow, big high expectations. You're going to be a rotation guy. You know, it's
well, when you're a rookie,
will
you're
he
just
provide
for anything?
Yeah, but we're talking about impact rookies right now. We're not just talking about people who will be the eighth man and get 17 minutes a game. We're looking for people who will step up and contribute immediately.
I think one guy that'll do that for sure is Julius Randle for the LA Lakers because they need a power forward. I know Carlos Boozer's there, but I can actually see Carlos Boozer kind of sitting games while Randle starts.
Yeah, that's just another by default. You have a bad team. Why not develop your guy? And if he comes in and becomes that beast, he'll, you know, obviously he'll get over Boozer, but then he just might just eat himself to the end of the bench. He could go either way. He has the talent, but, you know, with these one-and-done kids, I don't think the Boozer signing helped him, his development at all.
No, I mean, I think that was just a curious signing where they just did it because he was available, and they needed somebody to fit that spot with Gasol gone, it was sort of an overreactionary sign. They said, okay, well, we lost our best power forward, so we need a power forward to plug it in, so let's pick up Boozer. But they had already drafted Randall by the time that happened. So I think that they just have Boozer there for a year to just tutor Randall a little bit, and then it's Randall's spot. But I saw him play a little bit already. He's very nimble. He's got very good athletic ability. People compare him a lot to Zach Randolph because he's a lefty, just like Randolph is, but he's much more athletic. I mean, I saw him at Kentucky all year, and he's a terrific player. I mean, there's some other ones that – there's some that were high picks that I don't know if they're going to work out. Like Dante Exum in Utah, Noah Vonleh with the Charlotte Hornets. Another one that I'm not absolutely sure about that went pretty high was
Aaron Gordon.
Aaron Gordon with the Orlando Magic. Some people have said that he looks good. I'm not absolutely sure. I already mentioned – the other one that might be okay, I think Adrian Payne is going to wind up playing a little bit for the Atlanta Hawks. I don't know how much of an impact rookie he's going to be, but I think he'll play a little bit.
Yeah, but then you're good, you know, now we're towards the end of the lottery with just unsexy picks and, yeah, you know, all the big names are gone. So, moving on, crazy predictions.
Crazy predictions.
Give me some. Some out of the box. I already said Denver's going to make the playoffs. I already, in our divisional previews, I said Larry Sanders will come back and be a beast. Mm-hmm. What do you have that we don't see coming?
I think one of the breakout stars this year is going to be Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for the Detroit Pistons. I think he's going to actually play a lot. I think he's going to wind up playing a little bit more of a finesse style for Stan. And I think you're going to see him a lot. I think the combination of Mirza Teletovic and Bojan Bogdanovic is going to be a very lethal combination off the bench that's going to give people problems. I don't know if it's going to make the new Brooklyn Nets a lethal team, but I think that's going to make – I think they're going to be a little bit dangerous. I already told you the one about I think that Orlando is going to be worse than Philadelphia.
Good luck defending that one.
We're going to finish off with this one. I've got a few restricted free agents here, and we're going to go over under $8 million for their next offer sheet or whether or not they get a qualifying offer, and we'll see if it sticks. Nikola Vucevic, $4.1 million. That's his qualifying offer.
Over.
Well over, huh?
He'll be, I think he'll be in the same as, he'll get like 5 years, $60 million.
We're not going to count Kemba Walker because there's already reports that he's in negotiations for an extension, so that's a given. What about Tristan Thompson at $7.15 million?
It's about where he should be, $8 million.
But do you think the Cleveland Cavaliers will open their money even more, given that they're already trying to afford Love, Irving, and LeBron?
I don't think $8 million's a break the bank number, especially since the cap is going to go up.
True.
In the next few years. So if he can still be that glue guy he's sort of trying to become now, just, you know, 10 and 10, there's no reason, you know, he's a big guy, so he's going to get overpaid. So I think over.
Yeah, Ricky Rubio and Klay Thompson and Kawhi Leonard are gimmies. We know what's going to happen with them. Patrick Beverley at $1.18 million. We think he's going to blow that out the water, right?
Yeah, but is he going to get $8 million a year?
Yes. Because they want three and D guys are huge in the NBA. They love them. That's why Lance Stephenson wound up getting $9 million a year at a bargain in Charlotte.
He got a bargain, but he's still going to – Beverley is going to probably eventually be a backup.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he has a starting caliber point guard in him.
Here's
just being a 3-and-D guy.
Here's an interesting one: Enes Kanter at $7.8 million.
That is a big question. You could tell me, you know, they're thinking of offering $10 million. I'll be like, okay. Or they're thinking of cutting him tomorrow. I'll be like, okay.
Rebounding.
Nobody knows what he can give. He has just been a mystery.
Hmm.
Do you have any? Do you think he's going to get over $8 million?
It's possible. I could see a good NBA team with the new cap numbers and they overpay him. But some of these teams, some of these players might go ahead and sign their qualifying offers, knowing that for the season following, when the cap surges, then they can go on the new salary rate so that they can get more money on the next contract instead of signing one a year early and wind up getting short shrifted. But I think that's going to be the fascinating part. How many of these guys sign their tender offers knowing that? Kind of like Greg Monroe did. So.
Yeah, but you can have a bad year and now you've cost yourself that security.
Exactly. That's
yeah,
why.
But how much more are you going to cash in off that?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have 5 years, $40 million now, or are you going to hope you have another stellar year and you can cash it, become, 5 years, $50 million?
Well, that's
if
what
you have a good year.
That's what KJ McDaniels did with the 76ers. He was a second round pick from Clemson. But what he did is he did not take the guaranteed money. He took the 1 year contract and so that he's non guaranteed for the year following. A lot of people are claiming that Sam Hinkley only did that because he's keeping the money down so that he can tank, which is probably true. But what it means is that when KJ is done with this season, if he has a good year, he's free to go and sign whatever money he wants to after his rookie year, which is not common, but it does happen sometimes. You remember when Gilbert Arenas had a really good second year with the Golden State Warriors, and then he signed max money with the Wizards? Kind of like that.
Yeah.
So
Wesley Matthews cashed in, his one or two years.
Yeah, with the Jazz, and then he got a good money with the Portland Trail Blazers, which he's lived up to be honest with you.
It's
going to be interesting. We're going to be talking about that salary cap situation for probably the rest of the season, because that's going to be a fascinating situation as we go along, just like a lot of the teams that are going to have fascinating situations with their schedules, with their teams, if there's any player movement at the trade deadline. But we're going to have all of that covered for you. We're going to be doing this every 2 weeks. We're going to have everything from whatever games to watch to any trends. We might even have a special every now and then for you every week to keep things fresh for you. So, Adam Murray, you got anything before we let these people go watch their Tuesday night opening game?
Look for another blockbuster trade this season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it'll be, but there's a lot of teams who are hungry. Houston, Sacramento, Detroit looking to move some players around, so I'm saying look for more. The craziness hasn't ended yet.
I'll give you one. You asked me for a bold prediction, and I thought about it for a while. I'll give you one more. I think Eric Spoelstra might not be the head coach by the end of the season.
Okay.
I'll give you that one. I think I think that situation's more fluid than people think. I don't think it's they're automatically a good team. I can see a collective freakout in Miami if things go south and they have a losing record by the All-Star break. That's my bold prediction, that things might go to ruins in Miami quicker than people think.
All right, sounds good.
But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. This has been the PTBN's NBA team podcast. Almost messed it up. And we're going to catch you all on the bounce. I hope you enjoy the season. We're going to be seeing you every now and then. Take care, guys.